Duncan McLeod, and as I'm sure you know by now, this is the Tech Central podcast. Now, I get a lot of press releases in my inbox every day, but one that arrived a couple of days ago really caught my eye. It was from a startup fintech player called Better. That's Better without the second E, BETTR. Now, Better describes itself as a new challenger in the finance sector and aims to, and I quote, introduce South Africa to a new digital-first culture of money and a better alternative to the dominant world of finance. In short, the company wants to shake up the world of banking. So the founders of Better have kindly agreed to come onto the Tech Central podcast today and tell us more about what it is they're doing. So I'd like to welcome Better CEO Toby van Zyl and his business partner and the company's chief technology officer. And that is Andrzej Stępowski. I hope I've pronounced your name correctly there. Good to see you both, and thanks for taking the time. Toby, you're in JBay, and Andrzej, you're in Perth, Australia right now.
Yes, correct. Good to meet you, Duncan. Thank you for having us.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. What are you doing in Jeffreys Bay, of all places, Toby?
I surf and I work.
You surf and you work.
Every day.
All right.
Surf and I work.
Sounds like
that's
a good
what I
life.
Do.
Sounds like a good
Cape
life.
Town? Yeah.
Okay.
Enjoying building a company remotely and also being close to the things that you love. It helps you to stay sane, especially when you're building a company like Better.
Right. And Andrzej, I believe you're stuck in Perth because of lockdown rules.
Yeah. So, Corona, we found ourselves in Perth. We spent 8 years in Sydney, Australia. So, we're quite familiar with the country. And yeah, we're just riding out the storm here, and hopefully we can come home soon.
Great stuff. Well, we're going to talk about Better now, and it really does look like an interesting proposition. It's aimed at Gen Z and Gen Zers, if I can call them that, and millennials. Now, Toby, let me start with you. You guys have been working on this project for several years now. What were the origins of this idea, and how do you know Andrzej, and how did this all come to fruition?
Sure, it feels like ages ago, but it also feels so fresh. So, I've been in financial services technology for the last 15 years. So, one of the first companies that I've launched back in 2011 was called MoneySmart. And MoneySmart was a personal finance management tool, very much like 22/7 today. You'd aggregate all of your financial information to a single place. And I think that's where the penny dropped for me, where we started looking at how many people were connecting multiple accounts? And it's very evident that the average South African has more than one bank account. And when you dive deep into the data and you engage with your customers, you quickly realize that no single bank provides all of the value, right? So yet people are charged exorbitant fees, 360 billion to be accurate in financial year in 2018 to 2019. Half of that was transactional fees amongst the big five banks. You know that, and if you think about it, the average person has to work at least half a day or earn a half a day's minimum wage just to afford their bank fees. So for us, that's a huge barrier, especially to young people. And secondly, when it comes to accessing larger financial services, the old traditional concept of building a credit score and becoming worthy, credit worthy, why are young people excluded from participating in any of these credit or wealth generating activities? So when you graduate, you literally, if you need a personal loan or a credit card, you're really charged at the highest interest rate, which penalizes you when you're not even just about to take part in the working class. For us, that's unfair, and we believe that needs to change. And digital banking with a financial intelligence and big data can really drive that change for us.
Okay, so Andrzej, tell me, how did this all come about? What's involved in building a business like this, and are you taking on the big banks?
I came back from Sydney, Australia in early 2016 with my wife and two kids. And soon afterwards, I met up with Toby through a mutual friend that I'd studied engineering with. And basically, ever since, Toby sold me on the vision that he'd been working on, as you mentioned, called Better. And yeah, so for the last 4 years, we've been solidly building this digital bank. I think that there's definitely a space for us today, and all the traditional financial institutions are under a lot of pressure with all the changes in tech over recent years. The era of open banking is around the corner, and as you can see, what's happened in Europe with PSD2 regulations. So I think that yeah, we're definitely competing with the banks. We're want to own the customer, the relationship with the customer, specifically for the Gen Z audience, and you know, we will have a different business model. So we will originate products in a different way through our platform. We won't provide the products ourselves, but we'll match our users to the best products out there. Okay. So.
Okay. So are you going to be a licensed financial services institution? Are you going to take deposits yourself, or will you work through financial services partners to do that?
You go for it, Toby.
Oh, no, it's fine. So we partnered with a sponsor bank in South Africa. There was no need for acquiring a heavy banking license, especially predominantly because our model is not to take deposits to lend. So for that matter, we wanted to provide the lowest cost possible transactional and savings capability, and offering customers no fee banking plus interest on their balances. So with that, we would then lower the access, lower the barrier in terms of costs, and provide a greater experience. Through the data, we're going to create a new credit worthiness alternative, and that will then be published through open API to a marketplace. So our business model is that of marketplace, where third-party apps and developers and institutions can come and co-create and build products in accordance to the needs of our community. When it comes to the licensing side, we remain a technology company first that does banking better, right? So we do not want to be bombarded with a high level of governance and regulation, although we need to comply with our sponsor bank in line with the South African Reserve Bank's regulations. But for us, we believe that a marketplace business model is great because multiple products and services can now be matched and profiled to a single consumer, as opposed to a consumer being multi-banked, incurring multiple fees across many institutions. When a customer transacts with us, we have two revenue streams, net interest income and interchange we earn from traditional card and QR payment. Mm-hmm. So the commissions that we earn from the marketplace is on a transactional only basis. We only make money when our customers are spending or saving money.
Right. Okay. And so you'll work with anyone in the market whose products you feel add value to your end customers?
You know, that's a tough question. I think traditional big institutions, as we know them, the green ones, the blue ones, the red ones, they're all irrelevant for Gen Z, especially millennial customers. We've all grown up with them. We've seen them for the last 35 years. I'm giving away our age here, but there's nothing has changed. And I think the questions that Gen Z, especially younger individuals, are asking is, why are there over 100 plus pension fund companies that's banking 14 million salaries, and yet South Africa can only have 8% retirement rate? Mm-hmm. Right, so the dream of retirement is a myth, and the young people are asking those questions. Why somebody who's managing your money, why is it called a broker? Now, we don't have the answers for this anymore, and these are the questions that's coming from this generation. And there's a number of reasons why. They are woke. They have been born into the age of the internet. They're mobile-first savvy digital consumer, and they do the research themselves. And they are completely opposed to the traditional incumbent system, because looking back now, every 10 years, this traditional financial system with traditional finance products have failed them, has failed their parents, and they become the brunt and the consequence of such. So change is needed. And we believe that the way to do this is to speak to like-minded and engage with like-minded institutions that, number one, understands the vision of the customer, because better is a company that builds products according to a first principles design thinking. So the customer really designs the product. We just the guy that executes it. And with that in mind, it's important to also understand that the customer must be part of the co-creation process. And it's our business model to outsource our business model to customers. And it's far-fetched. If you ask any of the big five banks, if their customers can dictate their revenue model today, I think banking would look completely different. And I think that's one of the biggest advantages that we have from a bottom-up approach, is to connect with our community, hear their wants and needs, get their features that they like, design for the products that they would want to use, and then go and connect with the ecosystem out there, especially all these bright new fintechs that does not have a relatable and relevant fintech-only bank. So we're sitting with a lot of new fintech insurance, on-demand alternative lending, zero fee, zero interest credit advanced products out there that does not have access to unique account numbers for disbursement and collection of premiums, as an example. We can change all of that on a literally like fractional cost basis. So we're going to open up for fintechs, and we invite every fintech out there that's listening to this to come and co-collaborate with us, speak to Andre, help design with Andre, and build the product that our consumers are wanting.
Now, Andre, you mentioned open banking, and I've read a little bit about this specifically in the context of the European banking system, and I know there's some regulations around this, but what exactly is open banking? What is it going to mean for the South African financial services space, and why is it important for Better?
Well, so I think fundamentally, a large institution might be quite good at a lot of things. So they might be good at, they might have a good insurance product, they might have a decent savings product and an okay mortgage, but they're not the best at one single thing. So for example, if last year I chose to bank with FNB because they had a good interest rate on a savings account, but this year I want to buy a house, so I'm going to go and shop around for a mortgage. And I fill out an application 5 times at 5 different banks, and I finally settle on a mortgage with ABSA.
Okay.
So then you can see the problem right there. The way that tech's advanced over the last few years, we shouldn't be having to do that all the time. So the problem is already being solved with PSD2 overseas. It's an open banking initiative in Europe, where the regulation dictates that financial institutions must allow third parties to access customer data if the customer is given explicit consent to do so. So ultimately what it's doing is it's taking away the competitive advantage from these financial institutions who have this quarantine around the user's data, and it gives customers access to shop around for competitive financial services from other banks or fintechs. And this is the start of an era of open banking, where the shift in focus is going to be towards providing the best, most competitive products to the customer. So that's ultimately what Better's trying to do in the South African sense, where we can cherry pick the best, most applicable products out there, build up a financial profile of the customer, and match our customers to the best that's out there through an open banking. And the way that Better benefits to compare to traditional institutions is, like Toby mentioned earlier, it's not part of our business model to make money off mortgages. We're not originating them. So we're not cannibalizing our own market, whereas traditional institutions would be. If they're going to go and refer their customers to other mortgage providers, they're cannibalizing the mortgage business. Mm. So we see a huge opportunity there to actually open up banking for everyone. And hopefully we can do it for Gen Zs in South Africa at the start.
Right. Right. You mentioned Gen Z or Gen Z a number of times. You've mentioned millennials. What age group specifically are we looking at here?
Well, so right now...
Sorry, okay. Toby. I need to direct questions to you. Sorry, it's my fault.
That's cool. Gen Z, they are 25 years and younger. They are a third of South Africa's population. It's projected that by the end of 2023, they'll be having to spend 120 billion rand in disposable income. Mm-hmm. We are certainly positioning ourselves among 16-year-olds. It's proven in industry that South Africans, we don't really switch banks. We just open up new accounts. So the advantage is to be young and relatable, where customers are really thinly served. So there's no bank for your Xbox, really. There's no digital bank that integrates into your social life. And there's no bank that really prices for micro payments. Mm-hmm. So you know, when you're a gamer or an e-gamer, you're spending like $1 every 1 minute. And you might just top up frequently. I've seen a gamer's bank statements. It's insane, like 35 transactions in a single day. And that's a lot of money and comes at a high cost for a traditional institution on very small fractional payments. So the 16-year-old is very important for us because we also believe they're going to shape and lead the future. And we want to be associated with the way that they view the world and be back behind them as opposed to top down to them all the way up to 35. I mean, like I said, majority of us are still credit thin. We don't have sufficient credit scores. We're required to take on expensive debt in order to access good debt. It sounds very counterintuitive. And for us, when you're between the ages of 16 and 35, that's where we can unlock the most value, grow with you. So we're providing you with tech tools and most importantly, also financial literacy, mm-hmm. right? So that from your first 100 Rand or 1,000 Rands in pocket money, the moment it hits your Better account, you start earning interest, you start getting cash back, and you start investing and saving that. So managing your money and growing your money to, you know, as you adult. Yeah. So yeah, it's a large market, especially in the African continent, and we do have aspirations. Next month, we're going to let out quite a nice initiative, a very large strategic partnership that Better has recently concluded, and we'll be able to share a little bit more about our African aspirations as well.
All right. So let's say I'm an 18-year-old, Turby. I'm listening to this podcast, and I think, well, this sounds quite interesting. I think I'm going to sign up as soon as it's available. What should I be expecting? What services will you be offering on launch? Will I get a transactional bank card? Will I be able to use it to make payments at retail stores, for example, and online? What sort of products and services would I be able to sign up for on day one?
Yeah. Look, we'll give you a high level, and closer towards the end of this year, we're going to reveal a little bit more about how all these things work exactly. Okay. But in terms of the value proposition, so first of all, zero monthly fees, right? All the transactions you make inside of our app ecosystem in-app is completely free. Your whole KYC process is done within our app in 3 minutes or less. There's no physical branches or physical retail or even couriers needed to accept your card and activate it. You can transact the moment that you've onboarded. So we have very low distribution, onboarding, and origination costs of an account. Once your account's opened, you get two accounts. You get a transmission, a transactional one, you get a savings one, right? Yeah. So that they carry an interest rate, which we'll also announce, is very high. It's very competitive in order to be attractive to the customer. Traditional services, so you can make electronic transfers to traditional incumbent banks, but you can also do free peer-to-peer transfers, things like splitting a bill is quite a nice feature. And then value-added services, airtime, electricity, vouchers, mobile data, and so forth. So very, very robust in that sense. But I think what excites us most is just the execution of this product. It is absolutely beautiful. And it fits our brand. It fits the lifestyle of the customer. So it's really lifestyle orientated. And it's also designed for multifaceted income streams. So we're launching with personal accounts predominantly. And then in our roadmap for 2021 is SME accounts, because Gen Z is a multiple-faceted income consumer. They are not going to, although they're in university, they're certainly not going to stay there as their only job. A lot of them are doing side gigs, side hustles. They're exploring and unlocking their own creativity to create new income streams. And before you know it, they would need a business structure in order to accelerate their entrepreneurial venture. So we're very much for the entrepreneurial mindset, lifestyle banking to start off with, but ultimately a business for entrepreneurs, a business banking service for entrepreneurs as well.
And your, people's needs change over time. People's financial needs become quite complex over time, particularly if they're entrepreneurs and they're starting their own companies. Do you see yourself growing with these customers and starting to offer the whole panoply of financial services over time, or would you expect these individuals to start to work with multiple financial service providers over time?
I think that's what it refers to Andrzej, is the vision of the marketplace. So we want to be able to grow a few, so acorn to oak tree approach, right? And the nice thing about that is we don't need to do everything ourselves. We're open banking. There's best of breed fintechs out there that's targeting multiple verticals, age groups, and demographics of the market. And all of them now has a fintech first banking infrastructure that they can integrate into, connect and distribute and sell their products to the customers that we will acquire. So the one hand washes the other. It's a partnership. It's an ecosystem, not an ecosystem. And that also refers to why the E's were moved from our name.
Right. If you were to describe Better in say 10 words, how would you describe the company and what it's trying to do?
It's a digital-only bank that allows you to invest in yourself.
Good. Short and simple. Andrzej, let me bring you back in here. I imagine that there's quite a lot of work that has to go into the back end, the technology platform that you're building to launch this digital bank. What platform are you building it on? What is the sort of work? What does the work entail? What sort of engineering, software engineering you're having to do on the back end to launch the service?
Cool. So customer-facing side to start, we've got a React Native app, which means it's one code base and it compiles into both Android and iOS native apps. The app, like Toby mentioned earlier, takes care of a complete end-to-end customer onboarding. So we take videos of the customer, we make them say a few things, we scan the identity document, we extract the ID number, send it to Home Affairs for verification. We do a comparison between the ID document image and the video to make sure that that the liveness detection, make sure that it's the same person. And ultimately, at the end, we provide a fully functional bank account. We also provide a Visa digital card.
Okay.
And then the app will talk to the better backend through a GraphQL interface. So GraphQL is developed by Facebook. It's just a data query language for APIs, an alternative to a REST integration. And our backend sits 100% in the cloud. It's AWS, the new Cape Town region, which came around in June. So nearly all the services are sitting there. There are one or two AWS services that we use that aren't available in Cape Town. So they're sitting in Ireland. And then, the actual code, the logic sitting in Python, it's Lambdas, so it's serverless. We do have an EC2 instance for our core banking application. And then we've got maybe three key integrations with third parties. The first one is our CMS. So that's our card management service, which is PCR compliant. They issue the card PANs and they have an integration into the Visa token store for digital payments. Our second big integration is into our Alliance Banking partner. So that's a batch integration day end for file settlement, so transactions, FICA reporting, fraud, all of that kind of stuff. And then the third big integration is into Gemalto, who's assisting with our security. So Gemalto ensure that the user on that app, when they get provisioned to our backend, it's via a secondary channel, and they are used to decrypt OTPs to as part of authentication and sensitive transactional information.
Interesting you say you're going to be using the AWS region here in Cape Town. The arrival of hyperscale cloud computing, has it made it significantly easier to launch a digital bank like you guys are doing?
Like you can't believe. It's kind of actually been around for a while now. Just not specifically in South Africa. The Cape Town region helps us because the regulators are a lot more happy when all the sensitive information sitting within South Africa's borders. So we're very grateful. It simplifies our regulation roadmap that it's sitting in Cape Town. But the main benefit is, especially for fintechs, is the low barrier to entry. You can spin up servers and applications almost on free tiers nowadays where you don't need to provision big expensive servers and hardware infrastructure and even worry about the security of the infrastructure. It's all taken care of by AWS. So that's a huge benefit for us. And then when it comes to high availability requirements, disaster recovery, data encryption, security of the infrastructure, we really don't have to worry too much about that stuff. It's all taken care of by AWS. It's as long as you follow best practices, there's hundreds of white papers out there and huge corporates that use them. Mm-hmm. So literally click a few buttons and you can get going. So it's been absolutely massive change. It's been one of the big tech advances of our time for sure.
Interesting. Very interesting. Now you mentioned the regulatory side of things. What sort of regulatory oversight is involved in launching your business?
Sure. So for us, okay.
Sorry, Toby, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I can. In terms of regulatory, so there is a function, the Reserve Bank has provided certain commercial banks with what we call a Guidance Note 5, and that's where a licensed commercial registered retail bank in South Africa can really outsource its core functions to a third-party institution. Now, it might seem as simple like as that, but it is not. Our journey has taken 8 months to prepare an application to be GN5 ready with the SARB. And that process you undergo with your sponsor bank. So there's so much paperwork, so much governance, so much compliance going in that. We had to undergo multiple audits. Deloitte audited us earlier this year in April. Our card scheme had to audit us. We had to comply with all those rules and regulations. And then you go through your submission process. So that submission process post 8 to 9 months, if you're lucky, if you know what you're doing, can take another 6 months. So just the regulatory journey is about a 15 to 16 month process before you finally can actually launch. And even if you get to launch, there are going to be a few terms and conditions that you would have to satisfy. Yeah. Right, over a period of time. So in 2019, we've been able to launch already in February, and a lot has happened. We've restructured our entire business. We've restructured our regulatory setup with our Alliance Bank. We wanted to expand our product stack. We wanted to improve and refactor our technology like Andrzej has been doing for a year and a half now. And we could have launched almost 2-3 times. But it's very capital intensive journey. It's a long regulatory path that you have to walk. There's very little investment that is going to fund your regulatory path of no success. Yes. And there's no guarantee of that. So the barrier to entry is extremely high. It's taken us 4, we can call it 5 years to be launch ready. So yeah, it's no easy feat. We don't have big backers and balance sheets, you know, that you can satisfy the regulatory with. So, but we've been very fortunate that we could stick it through, and we've got a great sponsor bank to help us through the process.
Do you think the level of regulation is justified, or is it too onerous?
Definitely too onerous. I mean, similar to open banking, there's fintech payment licenses in other countries like the UK, the US, Hong Kong, India. And that's definitely a lower cost barrier just to simply get into national payments network. Right, we have to go and set up a full stack bank without holding a full stack license or tier one or tier two license in order to access the payments network of South Africa. Mm-hmm. Now, we know the SARB is working on innovative fintech initiatives, but there's no direct talks about a fintech payments only license that allows a fintech to receive a deposit and then orchestrate or manage payments. And we hope that that's going to go that way. I mean, there's only 7 retail banks in this market. There's still a big playground to serve a lot of underserved customers, and more competition drives down price. In digital, it's really about demonetization, and rather we would want to stick it out. But, you know, we don't feel we need any of those big license categories. We do hope that some sorts of that comes through that makes it easier. But that also means we'll get a lot more competition, which we'll welcome. But it's a long journey. Our regulatory framework is highly protected. So we have a lot of respect knowing how things work in Europe and UK and being all around the world. South Africa is a very highly protected, very well orchestrated regulatory system. So we're glad that we could pass the test.
Right. So how have you got to this point, Toby? Has this all been self-funded? Or do you have angel investors? Do you have VC guys behind you?
Yeah, quite interesting. This is the most painful journey I think any entrepreneur can walk. We predominantly wanted to self-fund the business, and there's a number of reasons. The first reason was we did not want to be under pressure of a quick return. This is a long-term vision for us. We're in this for the long run, as far as we can see. We're not building a company that we flip overnight. This is truly to make an impact. So 25 of us, the team, the co-founders, we all call ourselves co-founders. We've come together. We've put in our own hard cash. We were lucky that we had some success in previous ventures and recently before we started the business. So we can afford it. And that helped us to shape clearly the vision and to build a bond with the team and shape the culture of the company. Mm-hmm. Then we started raising a bit of money in 2017 that actually came to us. So a lot of early stage backers heard about us and inquired about and said, look, you know, this is still an idea. We'd love to be part of the ride. And we started taking in very early stage money. Mm-hmm. But the regulatory process and to get through that was an extremely long journey. And that's where you're not going to get any funding. So we had to bridge it ourselves. Did a bit of projects, raised a bit of money, put in more, everything that we have. And then friends, family, fools, dogs, cats, everything that has one hand starts investing, right? Yeah. And most importantly is actually your suppliers. I think we're so, so grateful for all the people that's backed us. I mean, we at one stage, we had like a 400,000 rand debt bill to a landlord, and he converted all of that into an investment in equity. Yeah. Yeah. And he spoke about other friends. He spoke to other friends about what he has done, and those guys were like, that's crazy, but they wanted to invest anyway. And today we've got, you'll see very soon, we'll put a release out there about all the people that's funded us, how they funded us, and how we've managed to make it through. But recently, we've obtained some really good capital. We're going to announce it very soon, and the large strategic partnerships, but it's been a hard, hard slog. This is a very capital intensive business. It requires tens of millions of rands for you to get through, get to live. And then, you know, our journey has just started. So we are going to be on quite a long capital fundraising journey until we become profitable. And I think that is the number one goal for us as a company. We want to be one of profitability. We're not chasing the Silicon Valley pipe dreams of unicorns or giraffes or any funny animals. We want to build a profitable, long-term, sustainable business. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think you've put off all any prospective competitors from following you now after that after that warning there at Derby.
Funny you'd say that. I mean, venture capitalists told us, you know, they didn't tell us at the time. They told us more recently. When we started, there were about six other lookalikes. And, like, who do you fund, you know?
Yeah.
You wouldn't know, and they're all unfortunately passed away. Mm-hmm. And we still survived, and luckily we could get the bit of money that's still on the table after COVID.
Right. I was going to ask, Andrei, let me bring you in here. COVID, how has this impacted your development and your launch plans? I mean, you're stuck.
Well, I think just fundamentally, COVID, in a way, has actually been quite a good thing for our model, because from a product perspective, we're a digital bank. It's digital onboarding. There's no human interaction anyway.
Yeah.
Pre-COVID, we did have plans to launch with a plastic card, and we did change that to be a digital card only, which I think was a great move, because it's just more scalable, more exponential, and a lot cheaper to get going. From a dev perspective, I mean, we're all on the cloud anyway. It hasn't really impacted us too much, apart from me being 6 hours ahead. So I'm having late nights. But in a way, it actually works. Kids go to sleep and I can smash it for another 6 hours. I actually enjoy it that way. Yeah, and the devs have always been remote. The resources, we do miss the catch-ups and the bonding and the having beers, but most the guys have been remote anyway. I've had our VP of engineering, he was cruising around the islands for a while, still working full time. If they can do the job, it's fine. We don't, they don't have to be sitting in an office every day. It's all our services we use are all cloud-based anyway, so it doesn't matter where you are.
As long as you've got a good internet connection, you can carry on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And also, just to add to that, the way that the adoption due to COVID has just pretty much accelerated the users, the customers, from embracing the inevitable, I think. Digital payments are coming. There's always going to be a resistance to it. But just like with Zoom conferences and meetings, once people understand how it works, it'll be difficult for them to revert back to the old way of doing things. And I don't think they ever will. And it extends into digital banking. People will embrace digital-only banks a lot easier now than they would have pre-COVID.
It's definitely impacted our commercial model, you know, just in terms of costs, the cost that we incur to maintain an active account, the cost that we have to originate an account, not needing any physical retail, distribution, courier, card production, all of those old legacy processes embedded. And it helps us to opt for speed, it's to always be digitally connected and communicate with the customer. So a customer would always know that this is digital first, it's digital only available, and that's been great. And I think the next big thing that we're looking forward to is 5G, the ability to pay, process transactions quicker, faster, ability to analyze data to recommend a better way of spending or saving money to an end consumer, the way to originate, let's say, a personal finance or a loan application would be much quicker, on demand, real time, single button that you tap, and streaming the information to the customer and making more informed financial planning and purchasing decisions. Mm-hmm. So the whole world is now mobile first, predominantly, and we're very excited that our product has been optimized for that.
Yes. Okay. I'm actually really interested in this Visa digital card that you're going to be launching. You won't be issuing plastic to your customers. How is that going to work in practice, Andrei? Do I pay with my smartphone if I'm at Pick and Pay?
Yes. So you get issued with a token. So a token is a digital representation of a physical card. And you can load that card into Apple Pay, Samsung Pay, whatever NFC-enabled payment application you use, and you can use that to pay. You can also, from within the app, pay for any QR codes, SnapScan, MasterPass, Zapper. And then e-commerce is the same. You can enter your details, you can view your card PAN and enter it in and do online shopping just like before.
Okay. Now, Toby, you're developing this with your prospective customers. I believe you've got a forum or there's some way that where your community of interested or prospective, or maybe I should call them enthusiastic prospective customers, are actually helping you to build this bank. Take us through how that works and whether the inputs you've been getting have really helped you in shaping the direction that you're going to take.
Yeah, look, we would not have done this any other way. The first one was blank piece of paper. So we went out to campuses, went out to schools, and we asked young people, you know, what's the view of money? Like, if you had to change the concept of money, what would that mean to you from a emotional level, from a tangible physical level? If you had to do money differently, how would you do it? And they said, look, we don't care about banks. We want banking. And what we want you to change is the culture of money and accessibility and so forth. So that helped us to shape the narrative. And that's what we're busy with. We've started with a crowdsource model, simple survey, Google Sheets, just getting random information. And then we more formalized that more recently. So right now, better.app, BETTR.app, you can visit our website. You can sign up to our WhatsApp community. And within the community, there's all the activities that we are following through for the next few months. So one of them is we're releasing app features every single month and giving our community first access to view them, rate them, suggest certain features. Mm-hmm. Next month, we are launching an upvote feature on our website as well. We're making it open to the public so that everyone can participate as well. So if you have a feature in mind, if you have a business model in mind, or just anything that you think is necessary for you, you can add it to our public board and the community can upvote it. And it's like an open democracy, right? And so that for us has been quite an interesting journey. We absolutely loved working with the young people. They are bright, they're creative. They see the world completely different. And it's very clear that banking, even though these incumbent banks have digital apps, it's not going to look anything like the customer wants and is kind of currently designing with Better. Our community has just surpassed, I think, almost 7,000, Andrzej. It's all organic. So we have a referral system in Better where you get a free hoodie. To get a hoodie, you need to refer one friend, you get a code. And every Friday we have a lottery. So lucky guys get hoodies, you get merchandise, even free tickets to some underground hip hop shows that we're running. So we're just absolutely loving it. And we believe that we'll be at 50,000 community members by December and start onboarding them the first quarter in 2021.
Okay. So those customers have been assisting. You'll be the first to get access, will they?
Yes. Yeah. So they are first. I mean, the first 10,000 is already, we're preparing to onboard the first 10,000 customers in quarter one, 2021. But in the meantime, we're trying to accommodate as many people as we possibly can.
Okay. So launching in beta Q1 next year. And when will you launch to everyone?
No, that's open beta for us. So we already started testing and currently testing the app and getting a few community members coming in. Okay. We can't accommodate everyone at this point. But very key for us is to remain focused, and the WhatsApp community really just makes it all orchestrated. But we have zero cost of acquisition right now because one person tells another person. We're growing by 300-400 people a day. Duncan, if you haven't signed up yet, you should, because that merchandise you might be able to win it tomorrow.
Unfortunately, I'm way north of your target age. I did have a look at your website there, and you mentioned hip hop. You've actually partnered with, I think they're hip hop artists, to launch a music video. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so that was a wild idea by the team. Terry D'Souza, Rashid Ferguson, head of brand. they really wanted to make an impact. I think that's reflective of our culture. So if we look at banking today, it's really shaped and it looks and feels like the industrial age, you know. And for the 21st century, we wanted to make something that's relevant, relatable in the language and in the culture of our customers' eyes. Mm-hmm. So the best way we felt to do that is to demonstrate that we are just like them. There's nothing fancy about me or Anjo or any of our team. There's no suit and ties. We're very passionate people. We're investing our money, but we're just as cool and we're just as like happy to be, you know, flat structure, very much aligned to our customers. So no ego. And for us, the best way to announce that we believe the youth deserves better, nothing brings people together more than music does. Mm-hmm. And the energy predict, and what we did is we put a brief out there.
Okay.
Worked with our partners. And we put a brief out there. We said, look, we are creating a new culture of money. The best way to do it is we want to write a song about this and make a music video that really demonstrates who we are. Like, as a brand statement. So all these artists started connecting with us. And Celebrity Services Africa is a celebrity services management company. And they started reaching out and having a chat with Costa, having a chat with Dee Koala. And they bring new dynamics to South African business culture. There's, you know, female empowerment, mixed race, no, like gender diversification, all of that. We want complete equality. We want complete inclusivity. And we thought that if to make it as powerful and to make it as colorful, this music video is the right way to go. So we made a music video in 6 weeks. It was a lot of hard work. Everyone came together. It was extremely hard work, but it was so well received and it's just topping right now. So hopefully, you know, we get a YouTube viewership reward and maybe the track goes double platinum. We don't know yet, but received.
When was it launched?
It was on Friday.
Yeah. Oh, so it's just been released. Okay. And
last Friday, and it's going to go live on YouTube this week, Friday. So it's already had over like 25,000 people watch it, you know, just in closed loop. So
yeah. And people can see it at better.app. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. And Toby, you and Anjay, you're both in the video as well, are you?
We're too old.
I was about to say, I didn't think I saw you in there, but if I did, if you are in there, I'm definitely going back to watch it. But
yeah. Some of our team members are in there, like Jamie Vanguard, head of community, Rashid Ferguson, director and producer. Yeah, we just love to stand back and support the artists. And we've had so much fun with the artists, with the ambassadors. And, you know, we walked off there and we now have 60 more friends. It took about 65 people to build that whole production. We did it all in 4 days.
Yeah.
It was an incredible amount of work, the planning, the logistics. And again, we almost had no money to do it.
Right.
So we just figure it out, and we had a few angels write us a check, and you know, people believed in us, and all these people came together and they said, look, if it works, it works. It's a great platform for all of us. We believe in the vision, and they all came together, invested themselves, and we made it happen. It's incredible what happens if you ask people for help, and if you truly have something that people believe in, you can make anything happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Great stuff. Well, I look forward to seeing how you guys progress. Good luck with the launch of Better. Toby van Zyl and Anjay Stempowski are co-founders, and they are respectively the CEO and CTO of Better. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to Tech Central today about your company.
Awesome. Thanks, Duncan.
Thanks for your time.